and welcome to Finest City Improv's podcast. I'm Tommy Gallen.
And I'm Dino Spazzini.
And today we're going to be interviewing Ron West. You've seen Ron on Whose Line Is It Anyway?, Third Rock from the Sun, Key and Peele, and Seinfeld. And behind the scenes, Ron is a director, a writer, and that's for numerous comedic musicals and for the Second City. Ron's coming to Finest City Improv on July 12th to teach a workshop, and that's called the Comedy Review Process. So thank you very much, Ron, for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Did you say community theater in your intro, or what did you say there? See, that's where the distortion is coming in.
Oh, wow. No, the Comedy Review Process? Is that what
No, it was during the credits part.
Let's see. Whose Line Is It Anyway? Third Rock from the Sun, Key and Peele, Seinfeld. Behind the scenes, Ron is a director and writer for numerous comedic musicals.
Comedic.
For numerous, very, very small community theater in basements of churches.
Although I have done a lot of things that were very cheap and very small, I don't know that I have ever done community theater. Like when I was starting out or something, I don't think I've ever done it, come to think of it. Oh, well.
Ron, where did you start out? What got you into this field?
I was in high school and saw some kids doing a play, and I was like, oh, I think I could be funnier than that. And so then I sort of got started doing plays with when I was in high school, and then in college, for some reason, we had an improv group. We were probably inspired by Monty Python. And then I moved to Chicago with a play, and I saw Second City for the first time, and I still remember that show, and I still remember thinking, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, you know? That's interesting, because a lot of times you look at, like, a Wikipedia site, and it always has the early life, and then career, but there's never that in-between section about what performers go through in between that time where they have a family and their kids and they grow up and they go to school and then their big break.
Right.
So what's some advice?
It's because they're drunk and partying all the time. Right. I can't remember.
Do you remember the exact Second City show you saw?
I believe it was entitled Exit Pursued by a Bear. It was the last night. That means to me that it was a Sunday night that I saw the show. It was the last night for an actor named Danny Breen, who has since become my very good friend. And so Jim Belushi was kind of one of the guests. And I think my friend Lance Kinsey and some other people that I got to know later were also in it. So I have a very clear memory of it, and I remember some of the scenes.
That's great. As far as that moment right before you started making it bigger, what would you consider to be your big break, to be your stepping stone from maybe just getting your feet wet and the study and the practice to actually making a living and what was your big break?
Probably getting into the Second City Touring Company was the first time I made a living at it.
Nice.
So I auditioned once or twice before they hired me. Yeah, that was a big, and I've been working for Second City on and off for 30 years.
What was it like on the touring company?
It was fun, but it was hard because being in the touring company and directing the touring company is like constantly bailing water. you're just trying to, have some semblance of the show, and there's always a new person there. There's always a reason why you can't do sketch A or sketch B. You always have a different running order. You always have a different stage. So after a few years of that, it's like the Beatles in Hamburg. You basically, you've done all your bad shows. It can't get any worse.
All right. Going to the Beatles then. You were doing the British version of Whose Line Is It Anyway in Great Britain?
Yes, and that's the only connection between the Beatles and and me is that we both once set foot in England.
Awesome. Did you notice a difference, or do you currently notice a difference between British improv and U.S. improv?
I don't know British improv that well, but as you know, Whose Line on American TV is a variation of the show from British TV. I think the difference is things that like you guys are all involved in long form, and I'm sure, and are very excited by that. In a sense, that's still just taking root in Great Britain.
Got it. So they were focusing more on short form, you would say, when you made it over?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. Now, you have a workshop coming up here at Finest City Improv. Can you tell anybody that's listening to this podcast who might be interested in taking your workshop what they can expect?
Well, you're going to be improvising on your feet a lot. And it's kind of like we're going to put up a show really quickly. So, you know, we'll improvise things, and then we'll say, okay, well, how can we make that work better, or what can we do there, or what can we explore? And then we're going to do it again right away. Sort of distill that writing of a review process into a short workshop. You know, it's sort of like the thing that we do in that workshop would be the thing that you should do almost every day if you were in a proper rehearsal process.
I see. So it really has a focus on using improv, not just on the stage, not just how to improvise and then bring it to the stage, but how to use improv as a tool to help generate ideas, to help.
Correct.
Yeah, got it. Excellent. So, you know, you are a writer, director, actor, improviser. You wear many hats. And do you find that you see yourself as one of those things the most? Like, do you identify with one more than the rest?
You know what? I think really what I am is a writer who happens to do the other things.
Gotcha.
You know, years ago, you know, somebody said, oh, we have to do this show, but the guy that's going to direct it can't do it. And I was like, I'll do it. I'm sick of this. You know, I'm sick of this, of all this, you know, musical chairs. I'll do it and we'll get it done. So it wasn't really like I really have a desire to do this. It was like somebody had to pick up the flag and carry it.
Absolutely. As you know, I teach improv as well, and I find that I like to teach level one because I really enjoy sharing this stuff with people who have that beginner's mind, who have never experienced it before. And just wondering if, you know, I see so many people that come to improv that are not looking to be improvisers, that have different backgrounds. And so can you tell us a little bit about how improv has helped you as a writer and how it's influenced you in
when
other
you
ways?
Improvise, when you improvise, first of all, you say things, you improvise things that you would never think to write. Like one time in Chicago, we did a sketch. We were improvising on stage. We had a scenario. We were improvising. And at one point, I improvised the line, "What you need is a good gig on the futons." And I've never said that before in my life. I don't know where that came from. But, you know, somehow as the synapses in my brain fired, and that came out, and it was, you know, I reinvented English for a little bit there. So when you're looking for unique things to say for your time. And a lot, I doctor scripts all the time. And somebody says to me, what's with this? And a lot of times, all I do is I go through and I take out the questions and I take out no. That's all I do.
It's really good to hear. It's a nice little tip there.
Every time there's a question mark, I think of it as an opportunity for, basically for a joke. Whenever I see a question mark, I'm like, ooh, there's an opportunity. It's like a little flag.
Yeah, and you were talking about using improv for writing and how you remember specific lines from shows that you might have done years ago. Have you retained some of the scenes maybe that you had done in an improv show and then used that for writing later on? Not when you're working on a sketch review per se, but just like,
Yes, I have. Like, like sometimes you go, hey, remember the thing we did that one time? Maybe we could do this with it. You know, it's never really orchestrated. Because so much of the improv is, to be frank, dumb and disposable. but every once in a while, you'll be needing something. You'll say, hey, remember that thing that we did? The problem is that people come up to me and say, oh, you know, I saw that improv show last week and, you know, you rhymed envelope and antelope. And I'm like, okay, I can't remember that I did that, you know. And it's not because I was inebriated, just because you're in the moment and you don't really, it's not your job to have a memory other than for the purposes of the performance, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. So improv has clearly brought you on an interesting journey. You've worked with some amazing people on some great shows. Is there anything that stands out as like the highlights of your career, looking back now?
The highlight of my career? A few years ago, we did a musical called The People vs. Fire Lawrence in L.A. and in Chicago. We took it on the road a little bit. And that was really fun because I had written and directed it and had some really great people in it. Keegan was in it for a while. And some other really good people that have since gone on to good things. So that was fun because I don't know if I ever heard an audience laugh as much as they did at that thing.
That's great.
And that may be there was times when, you know, we just couldn't even get through the show because the audience was just in hysterics. That was a lot of fun. I've done some other musicals since then that, were also very, very gratifying. So, I don't know, maybe Fire Lawrence. You know what? I haven't really had my career highlight yet.
There you go.
That?
That's
a good answer.
Yeah, just put that down.
Quick question, just from seeing you also on different TV shows, and I know one thing we talk a lot about in improv is low status versus high status characters. Do you prefer playing one or the other, or do you like?
I am almost exclusively a high status player.
Okay. What makes you do you think playing high status normally ends up being more the straight man, or is it just
not really. On TV, you know, I'm not a TV star. I'm just a guy that shows up and says the words that they give you. I don't really think about it as status or anymore of TV. It's just, you know, showing up and doing it. On stage, a lot of times, I guess, I do the high status thing because I'm just trying to get the basics out.
Got it.
And so sometimes it's easier to get the basics out when you say something like when you start the scene with something like, as governor of this state, I'd like to thank all the people that have paid their taxes over the years. And mark my words, if you haven't paid your taxes, I personally will come knocking to your door. You know, so then we have a scene that we're off and running to the scene.
Got it.
So now, you worked on Whose Line Is It Anyway, and this is a question that I've been asked before, but why do you think a show like Whose Line Is It Anyway with short form works on TV, and yet there really haven't been many successful long form shows on TV?
Well, there's never been a successful long form.
Right.
The question is asked, and maybe one that your listeners want answered. But the reason is you can't edit the long form. See, Whose Line is just, they can go in and take out the dumb stuff, and it doesn't matter.
I see, because it's all the scenes are so short, it lends itself to the editing process.
Well, look at the props thing.
Right.
Okay? They can do 30 of those in performance, but when they go to air, you might only see 8.
Oh, I see.
It's the easiest editing in the world on that game. But in long form, where, let's say you've got those 3 scenes that are going, and so 2 of them are good, but number 3 stinks. You know that happens all the time.
Sure.
So what do I do when the 3rd scene stinks? And I take it out, it messes up the whole form. See?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It feels like it's such a roadblock that nobody's even really tried to find a way around it.
They've tried long form shows like there was one that was some kind of life game on, some of my friends were on it, and I can't remember what it was called. Maybe it was called Life or the Life Game. And then there was that one that was based on an Australian show. Thank God You're Here. Remember that?
I don't know.
Okay, doesn't matter. Well, that shows you how quickly long form came and went.
Yeah. And so since short form lends itself to this editing process, does that mean that you feel a little bit less pressure then when you're producing a show like that? Because I would imagine that it would feel like we could just play and have fun because we're just going to take the stuff that's gold out and use that.
I think that's the idea of it, but it's a very specialized brand of improvisation.
Sure.
Usually in improvisation, when you're, live in wherever you guys improvise, it doesn't matter if you fail. It doesn't matter. In fact, sometimes it's more fun when it's stupid and you do fail. But on TV, TV executives are just, chopping at the bit to kill something that doesn't work. So the stakes are a lot higher and it has nothing to do with the improv.
Correct. I know you talked earlier about how Monty Python kind of inspired you to get into comedy and stuff. Are there currently any writers or other performers that still inspire
all the
you?
All people that I know that I like, I mean, the people that are inspiring are people that I know, like Tina Fey and Adam McKay and let's see if somebody who just makes me laugh. That's what I'd like to know. Who's somebody that just makes me laugh? I usually just watch sports and the news. I don't actually watch that much comedy. Well, my friend Joe List really makes me laugh.
Awesome. That's great. Do you feel since so much of your life revolves around comedy that you have a hard time watching it without, I guess, trying to break it down?
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's why I don't watch it that much. Who wants to come home and work?
Yeah, sure. So what sport teams do you follow? Are they Ohio sport teams?
I follow the Cleveland Indians primarily. I like it's football season. I would follow the Chicago Bears. I like the Cubs just because I spent a lot of time in Wrigley Field. I haven't been following them that closely. I like the Angels because I like their manager and they've got, some good players. Football, I like Chicago Bears. I don't follow hockey that much, although I have been to some hockey games. And as a child, I played quite a bit of hockey.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The thing that I'm not really good at, even though I'm tall, is I'm not a good basketball player. Right now, I'm a good tennis player. I play softball 2 or 3 times a week, and I've been playing flag football pretty regularly.
So if you didn't get into comedy, would you say that sports might have been a side passion?
What would I have done if I hadn't gone to college? That's a good question. I don't. You know what? Maybe I don't think I'd have ever had the. You know, you guys probably know people that are improvising that kind of came to improvising later in life, and they are also people who are pretty good at it, and they're grateful that they found some improvising later in life. But in sports, the late bloomer is a rare commodity.
Right.
They know if you can cut it when you're 17 or 18.
Absolutely.
And it's just a matter of, honing your game until you could be pitching in a major league ballpark when you're 22. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. You're retired early in life.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 22 in front of all of those people. I don't know if I could do it.
Sure.
So anyway, what would I have done if I didn't have done this? Maybe I'd have gone into broadcast.
Okay.
Yeah, that seems to marry the thing that you know how to do and the thing that you love and put them together. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I would love to do the play-by-play for one of my teams, just one time.
Absolutely, absolutely. So with the people that are listening to this podcast, they might be interested in knowing what other projects you're working on. So any plugs, anything that you want to let us know?
Tonight I have some plays that are opening in Los Angeles that Captain Butterfield and I have written, and that's called Fun and Other Traumatic Events, and that is at the Second City at 9 p.m. And then on Thursdays, my show, Quick and Dirty, is playing at 8 o'clock, and that is a show of all blackouts. It's really good. And let's see, what else do I got going on? And I have to go and direct a thing in Oregon later this year.
Okay.
A Christmas Carol parody.
All right. I have a quick question for your Quick and Dirty show that's all blackouts. How long is that show?
There are 50 sketches in 50 minutes.
Wow. That's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. And I think what's really good is I got really good people that could really handle it, because the lines and stuff are a breeze, but it's like, where the hell do I go now in the darkness? It's hard.
Yeah, it seems like the transitions would be the biggest obstacle there, the people running around.
It took us a while to figure out how to do it, and now everybody's pretty relaxed about it.
Awesome. And where can people go to get updates, Ron West updates on what you're working on?
Why don't you just go to my Facebook page? I'm on Facebook. You could also go to ronwestnow.com, but honestly, I've forgotten how to update it.
Cool.
So Facebook, my Facebook is so easy. And let's see, what am I on Twitter? On Twitter, I'm West98, which is my uniform number.
West. At West98 on Twitter for Ron. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Ron, we just want to thank you on behalf of our entire community for doing this podcast, for coming down and teaching the workshop. It's the type of thing that in the improv community you have so many young and new performers, and it really means a lot to us to see those who have made it coming back and sharing their insight and helping us to see that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. So thank you on behalf of everybody here at Finest City Improv.
You're welcome. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. And listeners can purchase tickets to Ron's workshop, The Comedy Review Process, on www.finestcityimprov.com. The workshop is on Saturday, July 12th. There is limited space, so we're asking you to please go online to reserve your spot early.
You guys know if I'm doing a games workshop the next day. Does that say there anywhere on your stuff?
I believe there is a games workshop the next day.
Okay, good. That'll be really fun, because because we'll do a show from that. But you know what the thing is? I was teaching in Boston, and the kids were all like, oh, we don't want to do short form. We want to do long form. And I'm like, but the principles are the same.
Yep,
absolutely.
You know, your job is not to, you know, hammer the hell out of this gag, but your job is to create a scene. And so it's just you get a little more help with the game.
Correct. We do focus mainly in long form here, but we do have a few different shows that do short form and focus more on that type
of
game.
Maybe I'll just sit in with the long form people. That's what I'll do.
There you go. And we'll also edit the podcast to put in a plug for the games workshop as well.
Okay, good.
At the very beginning, yeah. So yeah, thank you so much, Ron. This is the end.
Yes, this is the end. Thank you so much, everybody out there, for listening. My name again is Tommy Gallen, and this is
Don Dino Spazzini, and we were just talking with
Ron West.
Excellent. And if anybody wants to hear more podcasts like this and learn more about Finest City Improv and the classes that we teach and the shows that we have going on, you can check us out on our website, which is www.finestcityimprov.com. And that is the end. Thank you again, Ron.